This is Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide. Today on the show, Mike Hudima, tar sands activist. Words by Jora Lafleur. Music by Resident Antihero and Blackbird Rayum. This is Rage, building a community of resistance one podcast at a time. Hello and welcome to Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide, coming to you from occupied Amiskwisi, Wiskaigan. I'm your host, Seymour Life, and a special hello to all those willing to speak the truth about the tar sands. I thought it fitting to take my interview with Mike Hudima, an outspoken opponent of the tar sands, and intertwine that interview with Resident Antihero's You're a Fucking Terrorist, pointing out that in the process, if one is open-minded and willing to speak the truth, they are likely to be labeled a terrorist, especially in Alberta.
I'm a climate and energy campaigner with Greenpeace Canada, so I work here in Edmonton primarily trying to stop one of the largest industrial projects on the face of the planet, the tar sands, and then also trying to bring about an alternative economy here, both in the province but also in the country as well. And so that's part of it. I also am a climb trainer with the Ruckus Society, which is an organization out of Oakland, California, that's a toolbox organization for different activist groups when they are looking at more technical-based actions. Mm-hmm. I'm an author. I wrote An Action a Day Keeps Global Capitalism Away, 52 different ways that you can take action, and really span sort of the spectrum from illegal activities, or what would be perceived as illegal activities, to different ways to write petitions or write letters. And so trying to really span the spectrum of that. Used to co-host a radio show on CJSR called Rise Up Radio Free Edmonton, which still runs today.
You got an open state of mind, you're a fucking terrorist. You stepping out of line, you're a fucking terrorist.
Well, primarily in Alberta, the focus is on the tar sands. And we have two campaigners, myself and Melina Lubican Massimo, working here in Edmonton. The office opened in 2007, and we've been working fairly tirelessly ever since. And the reason for this whole focus of the office is just because of the scale and the scope of destruction we're talking about when we talk about the tar sands, of everything from water pollution to air pollution, to the amount of land that's being disturbed, to impact on First Nation and Aboriginal communities, the violations of treaty rights, health issues, you name it, the tar sands has it in numbers that, taken all together, are hard to find parallels elsewhere in the world. So the main focus of the Alberta office is on the tar sands, and then of course also on the solution side of things, of trying to propose, you know, what are alternative economies that we can move to, you know, what do green jobs look like, what would a green economy look like for this province, and how can we get there as fast as possible, and what does that transition phase look like. And then I would say the other bit of our work is also just supporting, you know, other struggles, whether it's other Indigenous struggles that are happening, or other settler communities that are impacted by various pieces of energy development throughout the province. We try and provide some type of role to those communities, whether it's training or helping them circulate press releases, or just being somebody that can talk to and sympathizes with what they're going through. We try and do that as well.
In your spot, you're a fucking terrorist. You don't trust the cops, you're a fucking terrorist.
Well, the official stand for Greenpeace around the tar sands is that we want a complete phase out of the operations. And we've taken that stance mostly because of the overwhelming human and environmental impacts from those operations. Whether it's from a climate change or climate crisis perspective, and the fact that the tar sands are the largest source of greenhouse gas emission growth in Canada, will soon emit more than the entire Czech Republic, currently emit more than all the cars in Canada combined. It's definitely going in the wrong direction when we're already seeing the impacts of the climate crisis around the world, seeing over 300,000 people on average will die every year due to the climate crisis. Millions more will become climate refugees, and now climate has become the number one reason for why people are refugees in the world, surpassing war. And of course, that's all going to exasperate as conflicts around climate change become more and more severe around the planet. So it's definitely something that we need to turn around, and the tar sands are moving us in the wrong direction, because they're not just being developed here, but we're developing the technology to develop it elsewhere. But also, you know, you're looking at tremendous water impacts, where you're looking at the tar sands currently, and we're only in the infancy of the tar sands, taking out more water than a city of 2 million people every single day. 90% of that water is never returned to the natural ecosystem, so it ends up in these huge, vast, toxic lakes full of chemicals like cyanide and mercury and emphatic acids, which were used to make napalm, a whole host of polyaromatic hydrocarbons, many of which are carcinogenic, and they now comprise over 130 square kilometers of our province, and they're growing on a daily basis. And the only thing that's holding these, you know, these toxic lakes back is earthen dams. If you've ever built a sandcastle, you know how well earthen dams hold in, you know, the moat that you just built. So we know at minimum these leak, you know, 11 million liters every single day of these toxic chemicals are leaking into our rivers every single day. And that's at minimum. You know, what the true estimate is, we don't know, because the government has refused to do any real studies on it. And if there was ever to have, you know, a more catastrophic accident, whether that's an earthquake or whether that's, you know, just an extreme weather event, which are getting more and more frequent, and one of these were to ever rupture, we're talking about, you know, toxic lakes that in some cases span over 12.2 square kilometers suddenly breaching. And so the impact would be huge, the impact on the wildlife, but also the impact, of course, especially on downstream communities, right, many of which are indigenous or aboriginal and are already facing the effects in their river system. You have communities that are afraid to drink their water because they've noticed that the water is different. They've noticed people in their community getting sick and dying of very rare forms of cancer. They're seeing it in the fish, and they're seeing more and more tumors on the fish. And so they know what's happening because they have that longevity in terms of knowing what, you know, the natural balance of the Earth's ecosystem is, and they know that it's out of balance. So there's those impacts. And of course, also talking about indigenous violations, you're talking about also talking about treaty violations and also violations of other First Nations communities that are still have never signed any treaties, when you talk about some of the pipeline infrastructure, and you're fundamentally displacing and changing the way that they've lived for generations. That should be something that we all take arms up and try and stop, just for that reason of the fact that we're destroying a culture who has knowledge of how to live in balance with the earth community. And we should be learning from that rather than trying to destroy it as fast as possible. And that's what the tar sands are doing. And, you know, beyond that, you look at the amount of land, which is greater in size than an area larger than England, larger than the state of Florida, that's going to be forever demolished, which right now is primarily like boreal forests, wetlands, peats that took over 10,000 years in the making. Like, you can't reclaim something that has taken 10,000 years to make, and we're destroying it. We're shoveling it aside, carving into the earth to create these, you know, vast open strip mines or these huge well pads that operate 365 days, 7 days a year, 24 hours a day. And so it never stops. A project that, when you take the totality of it, any one of those should suggest that this is not something that we should be doing, right. You know, knowing what we know about where we are, knowing where the earth is, knowing where our community's health needs are, you know, all that. But we're going full force. Greenpeace is in Alberta to try and turn that trend, and hopefully through various activities, through the use of civil disobedience and direct action, but also solution building, also a lot of community work, trying to show this government and hopefully the broader community a path out.
Don't believe what they say. You're a fucking terrorist. Wait 6 times a day. You're a fucking terrorist. Don't believe Iraq is free. You're a fucking terrorist.
Total is just one of the companies that is operating in the tar sands. If you actually look at top 10 richest companies in the world, 7 of them are invested in some way within this project. And, you know, that speaks again to part of the scale of it. With Total, you know, it's a French company, and put up these billboards that, like, my first glance at them almost jammed themselves. You had, you know, this pristine boreal forest in below, and then you had this industrial infrastructure above it. And when I first looked at it, I thought, what a horrible ad, because, you know, it just really sort of showed to me in terms of the transition of what they're doing. It didn't speak of balance, but instead spoke of destroying this beautiful forest and this natural ecosystem and turning it into industry and this industrial wasteland that we're creating. Groups that are in France that are actively opposing tar sands development, and Greenpeace France is working with the people within France to target the company themselves and say, we can't pretend to be climate leader here in France and mm-hmm. pretend to be a very ethical and then go someplace else and do this type of destruction. Like, that's, if we are moving into some type of model of global community right. or a global company, well, then our responsibility extends beyond France's borders, and, right. and we need to say that this is wrong. And then also communities here of, you know, you're seeing a lot of communities within Fort Saskatchewan and what's been termed the industrial heartland just northeast of Edmonton that are also resisting or gearing up to fight Total's proposal to put another upgrader in their community, even though they're already overwhelmed with industrial development that has suffocated and caused huge health problems with many members of their community that have already forced them to sell out. People that never wanted to sell their homes, wanted to keep living on their land, but, you know, they're seeing the same type of cancer rates, the same type of asthma and other respiratory illnesses increase and have eventually had to sell their land out to industry, not because they want to, but because they were forced to, and they saw no other option because of how entrenched this government is with industry as well. So we have those communities that are also actively fighting, and, you know, have gone through over, you know, 150 different meetings with all the companies that are in their area in a single year. And when it comes to, you know, approval ratings, the government has 100% approval rating, but we see these communities continue to, when it comes to tar sands projects, but we see these communities continue to fight and continue to resist and continue to try and show a different direction for what their communities want and a different set of values. You know, why aren't we protecting our farmland? You know, that area is some of the most pristine and farmland and most fertile farmland in the entire country, but we're destroying it to fund or provide infrastructure for this, you know, toxic mega. You got an open state of mind. You're a fucking terrorist. You stepping out of line. You're a fucking terrorist. Well, the first action that we ever did in the tar sands was on Syncrude's Aurora North tailing, toxic tailing lake, which is the same lake that the 1600 ducks died, and Syncrude is currently facing, you know, legal charges for. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go back to that scene of the crime, not necessarily saying that these duck deaths were more important than anything else was going on or the impacts on human communities or indigenous communities. But really, it was the first time that I think people saw just how vast these toxic lakes were and saw just some of the devastating impacts that they were, and wanted to go back to that scene to try to bring more attention. And so we entered the site and were able to construct a very large banner on the side of one of their tailing lakes. We tried to cap one of their pipes partially, and then also constructed a very large skull and crossbones banner so that, you know, you saw this skull image that was just puking toxins into our environment. And so that was the first of really, you know, just trying to give the world another glimpse in terms of what these were and hopefully put more pressure on the government to actually press charges. Mm-hmm. And then the last three that in terms of tar sands operations were really this last fall. A lot of it was in the lead up to Copenhagen, where, you know, we saw chance for the governments of the world to come up with a just, ambitious and binding climate treaty that would actually see emissions go down, would actually see communities be protected and reparations given to communities that had no part in mm-hmm. causing this problem but are going to need to be part of the solution. And wanted to put as much pressure on the Canadian government because they had such a negative impact on the previous negotiations because of the tar sands. And we saw them go from being a climate leader, at least on the international stage, to be one of the biggest obstacles to any type of progress and actively trying to dismantle the entire negotiations. And so we did three activities. And the first one, which I was involved in, was on Shell's Albion mine site, where we went onto the mine site, actively occupied four of the vehicles deep within Shell's Albion mine, and shut down that part of the operation for 31 hours, and then the entire site for 6 hours. And so the entire mine site was shut down. And then that was followed up with an action at Suncor, where activists climbed onto the conveyor belt that was transporting sort of bitumen into being processed and shut that down for over 10 hours. And then also unveiled a very large banner underneath the bridge that Suncor's operation is located right on the banks of the Athabasca River. Their tailings lake is right on the banks of the Athabasca River, and there's a bridge sort of spans the two sides of their operations on either side of the Athabasca. Alaska, and so we also unveiled a very large banner that was floating underneath their bridge that said "Dying for Climate Leadership," to really bring attention to the people that are literally dying right now because of the climate crisis, to downstream community members that are dying right now, probably because of the toxins that they're drinking, the water from these operations, and and hopefully, you know, again, trying to get the government to do the right thing and start phasing these toxic operations out. And then the third one was at Shell's Scotford Upgrader, just northeast of Edmonton in Fort Saskatchewan, where activists actively occupied that for over 26 hours and shut that facility down for the entire time, and really wanted to tell the whole story of tar sands destruction. So the first action being in the mine site, the second being where it goes into processing, and then the third one being actually in upgrading to show all the different very impactful and negative chains in within the tar sands operation.
Oh, you don't trust the news? You're a fucking terrorist. Got different points of view? You're a fucking terrorist. No flag on your car? You're a fucking terrorist.
Well, I think most is really a scare tactic of trying to label this terrorism, because when a group is effective at pointing out what really is an environmental and human rights horror show, when you talk about the tar sands, they're going to try and criminalize that as fast as possible. And whether that's through escalated charges, and we also heard the premier saying we need to throw the book at them and use every legal means we can to stop this type of activity. And then also using words like terrorism, which in both invokes something else and really think is intended to send chills through other people that are considering similar type of actions, where they're just standing up for their community and the government's trying to scare them to not do that. And it also, I think the other thing it does is the more that we use terrorism, or the more that we brand things as terrorists, the more desensitized people become to the word. And I think that's a very, you know, dangerous path to go down too, because then we can see people really being charged for what was a peaceful civil disobedience activity. And, you know, peaceful civil disobedience is the reason why we have many of the rights that we enjoy today, including, you know, many of the rights the government enjoys today, whether the 8-hour workday and, you know, the 40-hour work week, you know, that was civil disobedience that brought that up. So if the government wants to give that up. So I think that the more we use that term, I think the more dangerous it becomes. But that said, if you want to use that term, I would be more than happy to sort of compare our activities and the government's activities, or these companies' activities. And, you know, we did a peaceful activity, a peaceful civil disobedience activity that, didn't endanger anybody. We were very careful in terms of making sure that everybody was safe. In fact, even the workers on site and management for every action commented on how peaceful and civil our action was, and compare that to what these companies are doing, like knowingly poisoning downstream communities, knowingly putting toxins into our river systems, knowingly poisoning our air, knowingly completely devastating an environment that countless species depend on for their very existence, and not caring. Or if they do care, not doing anything really about it, and continuing that action on a daily basis, almost in a what I would consider a psychopathic nature. And then the government, who sanctions it all, lets these companies police and patrol themselves, lets these companies dump these type of toxins in, refuses to tell these industries that we need to stop until we find out what's causing these rising cancer rates in downstream communities. If you want to use the word terrorist, where does the label better fit?
They spill blood for oil, they're the fucking terrorists. Wage war on foreign soil, they're the fucking terrorists. They only see in black and white, they're the fucking terrorists. Take away our civil rights, they're fucking terrorists.
Government and industry have definitely done a very well-funded campaign to try and say that what the environmentalists are telling you, or what, you know, these First Nation communities are telling you is not right. Mm-hmm. And it's really been a campaign of a lot of what I would consider misinformation and a lot of intimidation in a lot of respects too. If you look at, you know, what happened to John O'Connor when he first, you know, raised concerns about just seeing cancer rates rise in his community. And so I think part of it's that, and then part of it's also that the government over the years has been very effective in at conveying that to be part of Alberta is to support the oil industry somehow. It's become sort of part of our psychological makeup, and part of that is because, you know, a lot of jobs do depend on the oil industry, and that the government has really decided to base almost our entire economy off of that industry. And so a lot of people work in this industry, and a lot of communities are need it for their daily livelihood. And so I think it's also harder to confront that, in terms of it's harder when your life choices are so ingrained in that industry to condemn it, because in condemning the industry, in some ways you also have to deal with your own participation within that. And so I think that's very difficult. And it's also, I think the other part of it is that because the government has been so single-mindedly focused, that people don't know how many other options there are of, you know, how we could be transitioning, or the fact that you could still put food on your family's table, you could still have a well-paying job, but one in a green industry that is much more community-supporting and much healthier for you. But because, you know, those alternatives have never been presented and have been so thoroughly squashed in many cases, I think a lot of people don't have a good vision in terms of what that transition could look like, or what that other world could look like. And so it is a lot scarier to go to a place that you don't know. And so I think part of our role is to try and really paint that picture of, you know, this is what it could look like. And there are a lot of different groups that are trying to do the same thing. And so hopefully as we move along, I think we are sort of picking up a lot more momentum of people are seeing the need for a change. And I just hope that change comes soon enough.
Your skin black as dawn, you're a fucking terrorist. You don't believe in Jesus Christ, you're a fucking terrorist. Condoleezza Rice, you're a fucking terrorist.
It's absolutely atrocious that the government would bring what essentially is a propaganda campaign to like our school systems. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way that they're approaching it, it's very one-sided. It's not, the tar sands is a big issue, and so we need to have that discussion as people growing up in Alberta and within our school systems. We need to sort of debate, you know, both sides, and we would, you know, we would be more than supportive of that type of education. Of, you know, we do think that our young people should be talking about the tar sands, should be talking about some of the costs and some of the, you know, the potential benefits, and hearing from all sides in the issue and making up their own opinion in terms of where they sit. You know, that is something that I think would be beneficial. But if you look at the curriculum that they're proposing, it's very much one-sided. It's about, you know, needing to educate people right about what, you know, the tar sands are. And what's right is what the government says and the way that they coach it. And even Minister Leipertz, who's the energy minister here in the province, some of his comments were around that, you know, whether it's right or wrong about indoctrinating these kids, it's something that we have to do. Was almost his direct quote, which was quite astonishing to get that level of honesty from a government minister. But I think it is right on. This is having to do a strategic choice, because they're starting to lose the battle in terms of the tar sands horror story is getting out to more and more places, and they can't control it. And so they're trying to control it by controlling the information that young people have about it.
Are you from the Middle East? You're a fucking terrorist. Do you believe in peace? You're a fucking terrorist.
I don't think that we can really separate these issues out in terms of, and it's one of my frustrations in terms of, like, when people call the work I do, you're an environmentalist. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Like, does that mean that I'm somehow separate from communities that also operate in the environment, or that that means I don't care about sort of the social or human impacts because I only care about the environment, and the environment is only trees, or the environment is only, you know, rivers? And there seems to be quite a disconnect between that. And so I think part of it is just approaching everything more holistically and saying we're all part of this living ecosystem, and we need to care about everybody within it, and that especially the communities that are within it. That's especially the people that were long before my relatives ever made their way here. And so I think part of it's about having a more holistic outlook. But I also think that part of it is that we can't just be fighting for one thing. Like, we have to be fighting on many different fronts. And if we don't, then it's going to destroy our movements like it has in the past. We have to be fighting for feminist issues, and we have to be fighting for Indigenous issues, and we have to, you know, be fighting for on all these different fronts, or else the society that we're building is going to be incomplete and is going to be just as vulnerable and as it was before. And then also part of it is also deconstructing ourselves. So we have grown up with a colonialist mindset. And, you know, I'm a white, middle-class male that has benefited a lot from this system and the way that this system's up. And I've benefited it on the backs of a lot of people. And I think that the part of, you know, the reason why that is so front and center in the trainings that we do is to try and to recognize that privilege and try and figure out, okay, how do I use this privilege, make sure that things are more equal, and to make sure that in the work that I'm doing, I'm not further escalating like the oppressions that have been done in all these communities before me. And instead, you know, we really are building a culture of resistance or a culture of liberation for all of us. And so looking at that, looking at, you know, how even the actions that I do, I'm more privileged in terms of being able to do civil obedience actions, because the way that I'm treated by police backed by a big organization is much different than potentially an indigenous community members is treated by police. And so I also think that there is more responsibility for me to use my privilege in a beneficial way and putting myself potentially in those positions as well.
Vote for George Bush, you're a fucking terrorist. Smoke the sack of Kush, you're a fucking terrorist. You don't support the war, you're a fucking terrorist. Built by Michael Moore, you're a fucking terrorist.
To start, I would push back a little bit in terms of, like, I don't think that Copenhagen was a complete failure. I think it was a failure in terms of the negotiations and in terms of, you know, the fact that countries were unable to agree on anything. And I think from a climate negotiation perspective, we've taken major steps back that are going to severely impact a lot of communities around this planet and potentially risk the livelihood of this planet altogether. But I think what did take a step forward at Copenhagen was the climate justice movement. And it wasn't, you know, part of the official negotiations, but I do think, you know, the mass civil society pressure outside that we're linked into a lot of communities around the world that are are facing the brunt of the climate crisis and were not responsible for causing it. I think their voices were really raised to a more significant extent than I think I've seen before. And so the talk in terms of the needs for reparations and the understanding in terms of, like, what those terms actually mean and, like, why it's so important, and seeing even representatives from Tuvalu, you know, talking about how this was a climate suicide pact and that we needed a pact for survival, and really challenging a lot of, like, carbon offset schemes and a lot of sort of climate capitalism stuff that comes out as part of these negotiations. I think a lot of that discussion was furthered because of the platform of Copenhagen, so maybe not the negotiations themselves, because of the platform, I think that was heard a lot more clearly. But in terms of, like, how the campaign changes, like, I don't think that Tar Sands campaign is going to change significantly. I think we're going to keep on. But I think the climate campaign, I think what you're going to see is what's already happening, which is that it's starting to become a much more decentralized approach of starting to see the continued failure of our world governments to come up to the type of commitments that we need time and time again, that maybe putting all our resources or a significant amount of resources to convincing them is not necessarily the best strategy. And instead, let's work on a much more decentralized basis. And they've done it quite successfully within the U.S., where they saw no climate leadership coming under George Bush, also seeing under the Obama administration how the same forces are ruining the climate negotiations at that level and are taking a much more community-oriented approach. You know, making those type of commitments and those type of reductions that we need to see at a community level, at whatever community level they can, but not just stopping there, but linking with other communities and then not stopping there, but then scaling it up one to get their municipalities inside and getting their municipalities to make those discussions. And then, again, trying to form a network of municipalities that are going to do it, and then, again, leveraging it up to the state level. And I think that's the type of change that we need to start seeing happen, you know, much more decentralized approach of, you know, we can't wait for action. We need to see action. Doesn't mean that we have to let up on pressure on, you know, our national governments, because we still need a significant amount of pressure there. But we also need to be acting in the meantime in whatever ways we can, and keep on trying to raise that bar in terms of what we believe we can achieve and at what level that can be done.
You degree. Faceless talons of the growing beast scratch everything you see. Careful what you say and how you pray and what you read. You could be a scapegoat or a casualty of greed. You'll be hella dead before you're ever fucking free. And the witch hunt will proceed so that no one wants to lead. Alternative points of view will be silenced with fear and violence. Conveniently labeled terrorist, detainer, deported. To save yourself, you'll be forced to be reporting them. You refuse to do so, then they'll say that you're supporting them. People scared and confused, forced to choose what's more important to them. Moral ethics or the love of family, they choose to accuse randomly. Speaking candidly on home security, the code word for ideological purity. They got a perfect recipe, one part deception, one part division. 21st century McCarthyism. Don't believe what they say, you're a fucking terrorist. You pray six times a day, you're a fucking terrorist. You don't believe Iraq is free, you're a fucking terrorist. Just bought a sack of weed, you're a fucking terrorist. Let me tell you something just in case you didn't know. Anyone can be a terrorist if they decided so. I feel confident in making a single promise to you. Somewhere there is a law that is against something you do. They did this shit before during the Russian Cold War. Accusing innocent people of communist sentiment. Central intelligence in your residence. Accusation without evidence. The difference is that now they made it legal. Yo, if you think for yourself, you best to fear for your health. White men in black suits are tapping your phone. They can incarcerate you and repossess what you own. Sends his decree from the throne. A new wave of McCarthyism. The previous one's hard to compare to this. In the name of national security, they'll dub you a terrorist. And just so no one comes in contact with your views, they'll discredit you on the 6 o'clock news. A new world order is forming, using fear as the tool. The vampires are swarming, greedily they drool. Ready to suck, they don't give a fuck. You with them and you with us. In corporate media they trust, leaving critical thinkers crushed. Oh, you don't trust the news? You're a fucking terrorist. You got different points of view? You're a fucking terrorist. Flag on your car, you're a fucking terrorist. Your skin black as dawn, you're a fucking terrorist. You don't believe in Jesus Christ, you're a fucking terrorist. Or Condoleezza Rice, you're a fucking terrorist. Are you from the Middle East, you're a fucking terrorist. Do you believe in peace, you're a fucking terrorist. You didn't vote for George Bush, you're a fucking terrorist. Smoked a sack of Kush, you're a fucking terrorist. You don't support the war, you're a fucking terrorist. Built by Michael Moore, you're a fucking terrorist.
I have committed despicable acts of terror, the very worst of human nature, and will be open for business tomorrow. Thank you. Good night. And God bless America.
They spill blood for oil. They're the fucking terrorists. Wage war on foreign soil. They're the fucking terrorists. They only see in black and white. They're the fucking terrorists. Take away our civil rights. They're fucking terrorists. Fucking terrorists. Fucking terrorists.
Resident Antihero with You're a Fucking Terrorist. Instead of my usual little rant, I thought I would play a spoken word piece by Gerard Lafleur, which is possibly one of the best I've ever heard. I would encourage all those who can to support the Civil Liberties Defense Center by buying the In Defense Volume 1 album. And then taking us out is Blackbird Rayum with Lucasville. Remember, the resistance needs all of you.
It's getting harder to breathe. Harder to believe that change will come in time. Time ticks. Talk of the end slips through many lips. Apocalyptic whisperings color my journey. And everywhere there is the yearning for something pure. We've stolen the quality from the air, plucked the clarity from the water. I, daughter of earth, mother, I feel I have failed you. Each day they impale you. Land fills, toxic spills, and oil rigs digging their deep pain inside you, forcing you to hide our waste, bear the disgrace of this human race that can't stop running from its own shadow. In fright, subduing you violently, for you are beyond knowing, mystical and wild. I am your child, watching in horror, as much more than 80 of torturers ignore your pleading, storming, bleeding warnings. Mama, I'm sorry. I yell, but I can't tell if she hears me. The torturers stand so near me, one might say I stand among them. Every few days I throw something away that will stay defying decay with a half-life of eternity in her belly. Smelly, toxic, broken, useless crap entrapped inside her. What we continue to extract are the healing crystals, the powerful gems, the metals and minerals precious to us, never pausing to ponder that they might also be precious to her. Not asking if she mines all the mines, the forced plutonium rods, the drilling, the endless filling of her body with our garbage. How much has already accumulated? The guilt, the oil spilt, the jaded, cynical apathy, the insidious, uncomfortable ignorance, the unbearable, everyday facts. Every day, the average U.S. citizen throws away 4.5 pounds of waste. Every day, this citizen throws away 1.3 pounds of food. While every day, 30,000 children in the world die of starvation and related causes. Every day, more than 200,000 acres of rainforest are burned. Every day, between 50 and 150 species of plant and animal go extinct. Gone. Forever. And every day, there are moments when all the facts stack on my chest, leave me gasping for breath, like millions of species now left bereft of a habitat to sustain them. And in such moments, I can't remember or explain them. The telling statistics, the rational arguments drain from my brain, and there is nothing but feeling, painful, revealing. In such moments, there is despair. And there is grace. Grace enough to face the horror, confront the tragedy, feel the sorrow so profoundly that today's facts become tomorrow's acts of redemption. We are truly so much more powerful than we've been told, alchemist warriors who can turn despair into gold, that we might bury it back in the earth, offer it to her as she ceaselessly offers herself to us. In true understanding, undemanding, respectfully awed, seeing goddess and god in every being that dies daily, given us life. May we dare to care so deeply that we let the despair wash over us, allowing the grace which follows to cleanse. 'Cause in the end, it may take about 7 billion teardrops to clear the water. It may take a day when we are immobilized by our grief, forced to stay still, until the whole world breaks down in exhausted relief and begins screaming, praying, dreaming, paying, agreeing to do whatever it takes to clear the air, make it easier to breathe again.
Thank you. face now still resides in Lucasville. The convict race 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 now still resides in Lucasville.